apparently it's not abnormal.
I'm good. Okay, so I'm going to get you to shush her panel.
Good evening. Hi, I'm Natalie Turvey, Executive Director of the Canadian Journalism Foundation, and welcome to our last CJFJ Talk of 2013, Guilty Pleasure or Real News. If you want to join the conversation on Twitter, our hashtag for tonight's event is CJFJTalk. I'd like to thank BMO Financial Group, our exclusive series sponsor, for making this series possible, and our thanks to this evening's reception sponsor, Waste Management. Yeah, Ipsos Reid conducted a pre-event poll exploring Canadians' thoughts on celebrity gossip in the news. We've included the poll results in your program, and our thanks to Ipsos for undertaking the research on our behalf. This past August, in the days surrounding Miley Cyrus's provocative performance at the MTV VMAs and the U.S.'s reaction to the escalating war in Syria, CNN.com, the worldwide leader in news, their slogan, ran as their top story, a twerking recap. The Onion jumped on this with a satirical piece calling CNN out for traffic chasing. The parody was credited to real-life CNN contributing editor Meredith Artley, offering an explanation for why Cyrus is twerking Trump Syria for the top spot on CNN's online front page. Here's the justification. It's a good question, and the answer is pretty simple. It was an attempt to get you to click on CNN.com so we could drive up our web traffic, which would in turn allow us to increase our advertising revenue. There was nothing, and I mean nothing, about that story that related to the important news of the day, the chronicling of significant human events, or the idea that journalism itself can be a force for positive change in the world. Clearly, this is classic Onion-style satire and an oversimplification of the issues, but is it really that far off? Is celebrity gossip shielding us from real news? And is the media to blame for a grab for eyeballs and advertisers? The Globe and Mail's Simon Haupt is here to explore some of these issues with our panel. Simon is the Globe's senior media writer, charged with covering the industry's transformation. He began his career with the Globe in 1999 as the paper's New York arts correspondent. After 10 years on the beat, including six as a columnist, he returned to the Globe's Toronto newsroom to join Report on Business as its advertising and marketing reporter. Prior to the Globe, Simon worked on CBC TV's new media current affairs show Undercurrents, and he's the author of Museum of the Missing, A History of Art Theft. During his time as an entertainment reporter in the glorious pre-Kardashian era, Simon interviewed some of Hollywood's top celebrity subjects, including Colin Firth, Daniel Day-Lewis, George Clooney, Drew Barrymore, and Meryl Streep, just to name a few. Please join me in welcoming Simon Haupt, along with our panel, Jonathan Kay, Allison Eastwood, Malina Arp, and Ben Mulrooney. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Natalie. I'd forgotten about Colin Firth and George Clooney and all of the men that you mentioned. Natalie warned me that she was going to refer to me as an entertainment correspondent. I said I was an arts correspondent, and I think I'm hopeful that we may actually be able to get into whether the two have anything to do with each other. But for the time being, I'm going to introduce the panel. To my extreme right, Jonathan Kay is a comment pages editor for the Toronto-based Canadian daily newspaper, National Post. He's a columnist for the Post op-ed page, a blogger for the Post website, book author, editor, and a public speaker. He's also a regular contributor to Commentary Magazine, and I'm told to the New York Post, presumably not Page Six. To his left, she'll pronounce her own name, Malina Arp. Has worked for Tor Star, Toronto Star parent company, in various capacities for some 20 years. She writes about pop culture and celebrity follies in the Stargazer pages for the Toronto Star and online at the Stargazer blog, on thestar.com. You can follow her on Twitter at Stargazing Blog, and if you want to accuse her of anything, that's the Twitter handle to reach her at tonight. Jonathan Kay, I should say, his Twitter handle is J-O-N-K-A-Y. To my right, Allison Eastwood, the editor-in-chief of Hello Canada, the weekly celebrity publication. I like to call it Hello Royalty. Allison has been with the award-winning magazine since its launch in 2006, and she's played an integral role in establishing the magazine as the, I'm told, the number one English-Canadian magazine on newsstands, at least, I presume, from newsstand sales.
Very succinct, yes.
Isn't it? Originally a native of England, she's the winner of several journalism awards. She's the only person who put that in her bio. And she's also...
Somebody else did that.
Well, I have a chat with your assistant.
With my people.
Well, there you go. So some of us don't have people. Some of us do.
Some of us don't have any awards.
Yeah, that's that.
But Allison is also the apparently the only one who wanted us to note that she has a degree. She has a BA.
Okay, this is what I get for not doing my own bio.
BA in English Literature from York University, the good one in England. And to her right, Ben Mulroney, I'm sorry, Twitter handle Allison Eastwood, 1L. And
You'll never be able to pronounce it. Don't even try.
Allison. And to her right, Ben Mulroney, the anchor of CTV's E-Talk, a show which I'm happy to say I've watched incessantly over the last 2 weeks. It has kept me up to date on everything from Miley to the Biebs, although my kids really want me to stop saying the Biebs, fascinatingly, keeping me up to date on haircuts of famous people. If you missed, I believe it was last night, Keith Urban's new do, he's followed Jennifer Lawrence and Jennifer Hudson jumping on the pixie cut bandwagon. So, thank you.
And we learned about the pixie cut from CNN.
I thought you were going to say Globe and Mail.
Yes, they were the ones who broke that.
Okay, there you go. Getting a sense of the ecosystem here. So, Ben travels the world, he says, to interview stars, reporting from red carpet events, including the Oscars. There's a little trademark on the Oscars, just so you know. Golden Globes, another trademark, and the Juno Awards, untrademarked. Somebody should look into that. He's also host and co-creator of eTalk 20, a weekly two-hour radio show that airs on 11, is it 11 so far? Bell Media radio stations across Canada. And last year, he added the role of contributor to his resume for the weekend edition of ABC's Good Morning America. Is that still going on?
No, it is no longer.
You should take that out of your bio.
Yeah, probably. Well, I'm still hoping it comes back.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so anyway. He was also the host of Canadian Idol. He's hoping that comes back. And reported on I'm hoping that comes back, actually.
Well, you could host it then.
On Entertainment News from the Vancouver 2010 Olympic Winter Games for CTV, you can tweet him at Ben Mulroney. And I have to tell you, thank you very much for inviting me to moderate, Natalie. I knew I was the right person to do this on October 3rd when I was working and across my Twitter feed, there was a stream of tweets about a shooting that had erupted in Washington, D.C. You may recall the story, a woman who we believe probably was suffering from postpartum depression. Kind of rammed her car all around the Capitol, and she was eventually taken out. Well, I saw this when the tweets erupted. I immediately went over to the Washington Post, which was running the reporting, and at the side of the page, there was something about Woody Allen possibly having abused his daughter, Dylan, and then I completely forgot about the shooting. A half an hour later, I climbed back up out of the rabbit hole and just went about my work. But I can tell you anything you want to know about Woody Allen and Dylan. So, Allison, hello.
Hello.
Canada. claims that it has, quote, unparalleled access to celebrities' homes and lives, and it publishes spectacular photographs, as well as exciting lifestyle sections featuring fashion, decor, food, and travel.
I like that you preface everything with claims that.
I'm just a reporter. I'm just saying, you know, I have not triple sourced this, so. Can you give us a sense, can you walk us through your editorial approach, how you put together an issue, or perhaps how you put together one of the many royal covers that I've seen this month?
Okay, so everybody else can go home, because it might take a while. it's a magazine,
yeah.
And we would put it together in the traditional way that you would put together, any magazine. We map out the stories. We decide what the stories are. We like to think of it as a news magazine. It's a weekly.
Okay.
So, you know, very much in the way that Maclean's maps out its strategy for the week and its tactics, then we would do the same thing. We have editors, we have writers, we have sources all around the world. We have reporters in Hollywood. We have royal correspondents in London, and it's news-driven for the most part. And we have features at the back of the book that are less time-sensitive and more lifestyle-driven that we do in advance. But I think what people don't realize is that we are always turning on a dime, and we're often more like a daily. We have like three of our days out of every five are we're on press. Or at least two of those days, three if it's a bigger issue, and we can rip out like one third of the magazine if something breaks and completely replace what we've done within the space of a few hours. So so we're always trying to bring what we consider to be news in royal and celebrity world to our readers in as timely a fashion as possible. And that can be challenging in this era.
How important are, in all seriousness, I joke about the royals. I love the royals. In fact, if you've seen the front page of today's Globe and Mail, we may have had a royal or two on there. How important are, I guess I didn't realize how important royals the royals were to Canada until Hello Canada continued to put a number of covers on the newsstands.
Well, the thing about Canada is, and Ben will totally agree with me, aside from being one of our few celebrities, we don't really have a star system in Canada. And Hello has 35 editions around the world, and almost every single one of those editions, they have a very healthy base of local stars, and they wouldn't even need Hollywood stars to supplement the content most of them are fairly interested in the royal family. That seems to be a constant across the world. But we're in a very unusual situation in Canada in that we don't really have that sort of core base of stars that have that national appeal.
I mean, can I jump in for a second? I think one of the reasons that that's the case, or has been the case, I think it's less the case today, is, and I'll use the example of, you know, you differentiating between entertainment and arts. You know, I don't do entertainment, I do arts. In Canada, for some reason, entertainment has been, we cast aspersions on entertainment. It's fluff, whereas the arts, that elevates us, it does something to the human spirit. It speaks to the human condition and blah, blah, blah. When we started doing eTalk, it was, as a quick little primer, Canadian networks used to do weekly entertainment shows simply as a way of keeping one foot in the world of entertainment, to keep connections to Hollywood and make sure that they could always communicate with the people they were buying the shows from or buying the movies from. And the reason we started doing a daily entertainment show was because we needed a secondary place to promote Canadian Idol. In the United States, they had Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood and all the magazines and all the blogs, and we didn't have any of those. So CTV said, we're gonna do it ourselves. What we realized, though, is when Canadian Idol went off the air, eTalk's numbers went up. And for the first time, we said, Jesus, like, we're doing a daily show here with Canadian content, mandatory Canadian content rules, and people still want to watch our show. Maybe we've undervalued the appetite that Canadians actually have for their own talent. And so we devoted a lot of time, energy, and our creative juice to tell these Canadian stories in, yes, sometimes sensational ways, and plays ways that would make people roll their eyes. And when we'd go on a Juno red carpet and ask people, who were they wearing? And the stars would look at us and as if we were insane and say, I'm wearing Value Village. And that's how it was for a couple of years until a publicist said, wait a second, they're constantly being asked who they're wearing. I represent a small Canadian designer. I'm going to put that person's clothing in the hands of that artist who will be at the Junos next year, and close to 1 million people are going to watch that red carpet. And the next person, that next time that person is asked who they're wearing, they're going to reference a Canadian designer. And then eTalk is going to cover that Canadian designer. And so in our very sensational way, and this is not meant to be hyperbolic at all, eTalk and shows like eTalk, I should say shows that were inspired
by eTalk. There are no shows like
eTalk. We help build Canadian culture.
Well, and so does hello. But the thing is that if your content wasn't anchored in Hollywood,
yeah,
it would not have the appeal
to
the average viewer. But
you gradually
incorporate the Canadian content into that.
We've been spoon-feeding it to Canadians for a long time. I think in a lot of ways they don't know that we're telling them a Canadian story.
Exactly.
And if you elevate the accomplishment of Headley to as high as what Beyonce is doing, Canadians don't know that they are celebrating their own. And you can fool them into getting excited, and then it takes on a life of its own. At least that was our theory. And the way we look at the world, it makes sense.
So you're proud that you've pulled the wool over the eyes of millions of Canadians.
Well, I think there was a disservice being done to Canadians for a great many years that we were telling the stories that we thought mattered. You know, we were telling the stories of Laura Secord, and we were telling the story of the hockey sweater. We thought this was the end all be all of what defined Canadians.
How old are you?
Trust me, that stuff still airs on TV
and it pisses me off.
It pisses me off because we've got young Canadians who are working their asses off to make music and make television shows and build fashion houses. And unfortunately, they are viewed by a lot of people in media as not doing anything that matters.
You didn't like those Heritage Minutes?
I like making fun of them. But no, I think we stop short of realizing what we are as Canadians if we don't acknowledge that pop culture is part of culture.
Sure, absolutely. So you both, it seems to me, see your roles as basically celebrating Canadian culture and Canadian stars. You've said you essentially single-handedly created a Canadian star.
Single-handedly.
We're just riding on Ben's coattails.
Nice, virtuous circle. Malina, what do you make of what these two have said? I'll just start there.
Well, I basically don't give a rat's ass where people are from as long as it looks like they're drunk or their tongue is hanging out or they're saying something really dumb or doing something incredibly stupid. That's what I'm looking for. They can be from wherever they want to be from.
We should have passed the wine around a bit earlier.
Well, that then reminds me of something that, John, you said during a previous conversation you and I have had. Speaking of drunk people's tongues hanging out, we were talking about Rob Ford, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's your take that he's as much of a celebrity as any of the Hollywood stars that we were talking about.
I'm skeptical about drawing a distinction between celebrity journalism and sort of non-celebrity journalism because I think they've merged. If you look at guys like Mike Duffy or Rob Ford, it's incorrect to call them celebrities, but they're sort of anti-celebrities in the sense that they're famous for being either corrupt or buffoonish or something like that. But the way they're covered, there's some crossover. I remember I was looking at the National Post website at the most read stories, and I think like at one point there were like 12 out of 13 that had Rob Ford. And this was our twerking moment. You know, Rob Ford had become, and in a way he was a sort of anti-celebrity. He was on Fox News and he was on CNN.
John Stewart,
the gold standard of American satirical celebrity. And you know, a couple of days ago, some small town Florida sheriff busted the local mayor and said, you know, what do you think this is, Toronto? Like, I mean, this is a form of celebrity. And so when I write editorials and op-eds about Rob Ford, and, you know, I can be very high-minded and say, well, I'm writing about politics, I'm writing about public life. I am, but I'm also, in a way, covering what is a sort of species of celebrity culture. It's just not the beautiful people, it's the sort of people who are on the other side of the aesthetic spectrum. Yeah.
Well, my pet peeve is when people denigrate coverage of celebrities' personal lives or deride celebrity in journalism in general for that reason. They, you pry into people's personal lives, that's all you're interested in. You know, you get publicists saying, don't ask about their personal lives, they must only talk about the movie. And, you know, if you look at any area of journalism, everybody's looking for the human interest story, no matter whether it's entertainment, whether it's politics, whether it's sports, whether it's business. You always want that nugget.
Can I jump in briefly on that? I agree. And even that includes the world of politics. You know, people ask, why didn't the robocall scandal take off? The reason the robocall scandal didn't take off in Canada is because there's no protagonist. Whereas Mike Duffy, it was arguably a much lesser scandal. That took off because there is this protagonist that, you know, he looks like the sort of third-rate James Bond villain. He says, aha, you know, that's the guy. That symbolizes something I think about politics. Or Rob Ford, you know, that's someone who symbolized something about class warfare in Toronto. Or Sarah Palin, you know, she became a sort of celebrity because she was a lightning rod for what people think about politics. And often the difference between a story that takes off and a story that doesn't take off is just whether it has a sort of human symbol attached to it. And that human symbol becomes a sort of celebrity, whether it's Miley Cyrus or whether it's a political figure.
Well, I mean, the robocall did have a single individual attached to it. It just happened to be somebody we didn't care about. It was a low-level functionary.
Right.
It also may have had something to do with lack of interest from certain mainstream newspapers. I don't know.
You make a good point. It was not an entertainment journalist who coined the phrase, if it bleeds, it leads. That was a mainstream journalist that came up with that. That happened long before TMZ.
The
era of sensational journalism predates entertainment journalism.
I'd also like to add that Hello Magazine completely ignored robocalls. Yeah, it was just
I'm
true.
Sure
wasn't
it was
there.
On our Panorama page.
Yeah. That's what you were alluding to, I think.
No, Ben's right. I mean, the sensationalist, you know, if that's how you want to term celebrity journalism, I mean, it goes back to very revered names in journalism, like Pulitzer and Hearst. I mean, they were putting out essentially like tabloid newspapers and writing sensational headlines and getting people all worked up and prying into people's personal lives and dirty laundry. I mean, I'm not. Certainly nothing that Hello would ever do.
Well, no, right. I mean, I'm mindful of the fact that, not to get distracted, but you're bringing up, you know, publishers who distracted, you know, millions of people and obviously in some cases helped create wars. So let's not get distracted and let's talk about the stuff that's in Hello and the purpose that it serves. You talk about prying into people's lives. I've only been reading Hello, it's true, for a couple of weeks, maybe a month or so. But thank you. Thanks to Next Issue, which is at the moment being rolled out by Rogers, her employer. I welcome you to come and take a look because it's amazing. I've seen dozens and dozens of Hello Canadas, and I've just asked me anything. I'm not sure you do anything that one could call prying.
No, and. The difference between Hello, the claimed difference, as you might say, the difference between Hello and other celebrity magazines and to some extent any other publication that covers celebrity is that we offer it to you from the inside out as opposed to the outside in. So the idea of Hello is that you're there with the people. We're not sitting outside judging and pointing and commentating. We're actually in there with the celebrity or with Kate and William in the royal baby's crib.
Right.
That's really, I mean, that is the way that it was created. And actually, what's really fascinating is, and probably not for tonight, really, but is that Hello was founded as Hola in Franco-era Spain. Almost 70 years ago, and it was created as an escape from the horrors of day-to-day life and the horrors of the reportage that was coming out of, well, in all the newspapers. And, you know, there was nothing really to read that wasn't very oppressive and depressing and just factual. And
that was a drought. Right, yeah.
I know, like imagine that.
Right.
But that was why Hola was created. They decided to sort of invite readers to escape into the lives of movie stars and royals and key society figures at the time. And that's how it started. And then the UK edition started up 44 years after that.
In the last 70 years, I imagine that the pressures of other media getting into that same game have probably affected, if not the editorial content, at least the way you think about what it is that you do. You know, if an august newspaper like, say, the National Post or the Globe and Mail, puts royalty regularly on the cover, or Maclean's magazine, or this afternoon, I'm fascinated with the fact that that this panel is happening this evening, because not 7 hours ago, I believe the Globe launched a new feature called, I think we're calling it the Afternoon Six Pack, which is like six celebrity and or crazy, weird, interesting stories you may want to know about. probably not having to do with robocalls. So given that, and given the fact that, as we know, celebrities can very easily reach their 45 million Twitter followers with the touch of a few buttons, how has that affected what you and Ben do? Ben?
Well, I think it's important to sort of look at it from two angles. One, you've got sort of the people covering it, which is our show and Hello and a number of others. And we try our best, and we talked about this a few days ago, we try our best to run our newsroom like a proper newsroom. So we want to be first, and we want to be right. And we want to fact check, and we want to make sure that what goes on the air is accurate. That being said, we'll concede, and there's nothing wrong with it. In our world, we will report on innuendo and rumor and those things that are salacious enough to titillate and that sort of thing. That, so we got, you got that on one side, but then you've got the arena that we sort of report on. And the world of entertainment is a protected world. It's a gated garden. And to gain access, you have to go through, you have to jump through hoops, and you have to know the right people, and you have to cajole and trade and convince PR people that you are in it for the right reasons. And so, yes.
When you say the right reasons, you mean doing something good for them, right?
You don't want to scare them off in a lot of ways. Now, yes, there are some celebrities that will just say, ask me anything you want. They are few and far between. Whereas a place like Parliament Hill or the political sphere, I think, only works if at least they give off the appearance of transparency and easy access.
You mean like Tony Clement, transparent minister? I mean, it's, as an example?
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Look at what's happening with Obama. The White House press corps is literally up in arms over their lack of access. If E! Talk, Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, and every single show in North America decided they were not going to report on this celebrity or that celebrity because of lack of access, that celebrity would be fine. They would find another way to promote their film. And so from that end, we're playing by a different set of rules. And because we're playing by a different set of rules, we have to behave differently. It's not that we don't have a serious intent. It's not that we don't want the story to get out there. It's not that we don't want it to be accurate. It's that the people we're playing the game with insist on playing by a different set of rules.
John, is that, you okay with that?
Well, first of all, I know my Toronto Star colleague plays by a very different set of rules, so we'll hear from her soon. But I actually find the world of celebrity fascinating for that reason, the ground rules that take place before interviews, where you say, you can ask me about my latest movie, you can't ask me about this or that. But it's interesting, because, and I kind of respect it, because the defining quality of a celebrity is that people want to know every single thing about their life. And that is not true of any other human in society. When I do an interview with some wonky guy who's written a book, I interviewed a guy last week wrote a book about the assassination of JFK. He was thrilled to talk to me, some academic who's written a book, and he knew that when I got on the phone with him, I wasn't going to say, what's your sexual orientation? What do you have for breakfast? How many people have you slept with? Because he knew I was going to ask him just about his book. That's the only interesting thing about this person's life, is the book he wrote. Everything else about...
Let's hope he's not watching right now.
He knows where he is. No, but in a way, there's no ground rules, because both of us know that everything else in his life except this one thing he's done, this one contribution to humanity, is totally banal. In the case of celebrities, they are people who... Every single thing, there is no limit to what people find interesting. If they went to the doctor, their fans would want to know about the tests for their psoriasis. Literally, there are people out there who will go on eBay and find the most obscure, arcane bit of... So if I were a celebrity, and I'm not, I would also set ground rules, because when you go into an interview, you're one of the few, there's 1,000 people in the whole world who you literally don't... There's an inexhaustible number of questions about your personal, your sexual life, your medical history that there's interest about. And so I guess I see why they want to protect that, because there are people who want to know about it?
I think that once you, in order to become that famous, once you are unbelievably famous, you're a millionaire, you live a life of untold luxury, you live that life because I buy your movie tickets, or I buy your song, or you can't then all of a sudden say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to talk about my children or my shoe size or what I eat for breakfast. Then the bargain has been violated. The bargain that is made with me as an entertainment consumer and this person who lives a life of I don't know what because he's good at saying lines or because he has a nice voice, not because of anything that, you know, matters in the grand scheme of things. So I have a real problem with this whole, oh, you can't take my picture, you can't. And also, of course, we know that there are celebrities who have the paparazzi on speed dial.
Sure.
And who, the moment the Oscar campaigning starts, all of a sudden, they're shopping with their children at the local market when we have never seen them with their children before. So you can't have it both ways. And I have absolutely no pity for any celebrity who feels hounded.
Well, we try to be sensitive to the ones that don't like to be hounded or don't want their, you know, their children to be photo. I mean, obviously we're offered, you know, thousands of photographs and from all around the world every week, and we have ground rules about, you know which celebrities are very sensitive to it. Well, a group of celebrities banded together in California, and now a law has been passed which could potentially put a paparazzo in prison for, you know, intrusively photographing a child, the child of a celebrity. And, you know, it's difficult because you do have to, you know, you want to bring to your readers the things that they're interested in, but you really have to strike that balance. And we do know which celebrities cooperate with photographers and which ones don't, and we really try to favor those pictures.
All right. So, but I mean, you're striking that balance because you want to continue to have access.
Well, it's also the whole ethos of the magazine. I mean, it's what our readers want. Like they want to trust it, and they want to know that the celebrities are participating in it, or if not actively participating, then, you know, tacitly giving it their blessing.
As opposed to...
Yeah, so that it's trustworthy. And not only do we have the celebrities' trust, but we have the readers' trust.
Can I jump in on that? Because there's something false there for me. Because you presented the magazine as saying, well, you're delivering the perspective from the inside, from the perspective of the famous people, from the royalty. But life lived from the inside in any institution is full of shame and cynicism and embarrassing details. Trust me.
Speaks from experience.
Yeah, but have you read any of the interviews in Hello? I mean, we don't shy away from uncomfortable subjects.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, because I think that thing about how the pillbox hat didn't match the shoes, I mean, I didn't see that as a moment of shame in the last interview. I mean,
should read the Robert Kennedy interview.
Absolutely. Right. You know why? Because they actually mentioned in passing, in half a sentence, that his wife committed suicide. But anyway, right. On to the next thing about his six children, and that's why he's not going to run for office. I will say, was there like another page where you went into why his wife committed suicide and all of that kind of, because I might have missed that.
We'd covered that in a previous issue.
Okay, fine. Okay,
but
sorry.
You know, listen, I watched a lot of the Rob Ford interviews that took place over the past few weeks, and almost every single, I will say, everyone that I watched really reminded me of a Hollywood junket. There wasn't a single journalist, in my opinion, great journalists in a lot of cases, but there wasn't a single person who managed to crack that guy. There wasn't a single person who got past his messaging. Yeah. He had something to promote. Crack that guy, just got it. but he had something to promote. He had a message to get out there, just like a Hollywood celebrity who's got a movie or a fashion line or a TV show or a song. And he pushed it on even the best journalists out there who took it from him.
Did you see the Matt Lauer interview?
Yeah, but I don't think he cracked.
Okay.
I don't.
Okay,
I think. Well, I mean, look at it. I mean, I think he got his message across the way he wanted.
That's an unfair standard because, I mean, you know, I couldn't crack this coffee table if I kept asking questions to it. I mean, if someone is willing to just say lies and silly things to any interviewer, it's unfair to say, well, the journalist failed to crack that guy if he's willing to make
it. No, but it still led the news. It was still promoted because you wanted the viewers, because it was just sensational enough. You know, you could have said, this is a piece of shit, we're not airing it. But you don't. You put it at the front of the news. You lead the show with it.
All right.
No, and I think to that point, when we're talking about...
Nobody walked out of their interviews with them. I'm sorry.
So when you talk about clickbait and people saying, oh, you're just putting up celebrity in order to get eyes on it. Well, it wouldn't work if people weren't interested. We could put up recipes for boiling potatoes and people wouldn't click on it, right? I mean, it has to be interesting. And by the same token, I think this poll, I think when people are called up and asked, do you follow the debate in the Senate, or are you interested in Miley Cyrus's ass? What are they going to answer? They're going to lie. Lie, lie, lie is what they're going to do. It is meaningless, a poll like that, because people are never going to admit to watching porn and to stealing from the corner store. It's just not going to happen. No, but it's the
I was
same
like
thing.
With you, and then I'm like, whoa.
That's the average today.
Speaking of, you know, that poll, one of the questions is who's most likely nowadays to create sensationalized, quote, clickbait to drive people to media sites, celebrities themselves or their publicists to get noticed by as many people as possible, or media who do sensationalized stories about celebrities to get as many people as possible to their digital media sites to earn ad revenue. And I was actually fascinated by the fact that apparently they have no reason to lie about this one. So one third of people said, hey, celebrities create the news. And two thirds of the people said, media. And what fascinated me about that is that I think if you'd asked the same question, say, 50, 60 years ago, people would have said, what do you mean celebrities create their own news? I mean, that would be completely an absurd notion because the machinery had not been exposed. And we now know, more or less, how the celebrity industrial complex works. We know that Ben has to make agreements not to ask Lady Gaga about certain things. We know that, I don't want to keep pointing at Ben and Allison here, but
we have to also remember that a lot of these interviews come by because they are on a promotional tour, and you're not going to sit down with Lady Gaga just because she happens to be bored. You're going to sit down with her because she's got something that she wants to promote.
Okay, I should also mention that in terms of clickbait, and I think I'm probably the only person actually bringing data today.
It seems so.
I have charts and graphs and everything, but if you're curious to know, I brought it because I was asked to. But if it is fascinating to look at the numbers on the Globe and Mail website, because subscribers, that is to say, people who actually buy the newspaper often or subscribe in some way to our Globe Unlimited package. Way overrepresent on the celebrity coverage. So they are, probably the most seen items on our site during the month of November were analyst upgrades and downgrades. That's financial analysts. But close second were the best pictures from the past 24 hours. And those are seen overwhelmingly by subscribers. So subscribers are there to get the serious stuff, and to get, if you believe that celebrity coverage is not serious, the kind of lighter snack stuff.
The great thing is it's the exact same people.
Exact same people, that's right. And they go over to Hello Canada and they say, where's the analyst coverage?
It's on the iPad.
it's great that we get, this up close and personal stuff with all the celebrities who are out on promotional tours. But I'm curious to know from any one of you whether you feel that in giving celebrities these platforms, we are perhaps, I'm sorry to say, doing some damage. And the reason I ask is because, Jenny McCarthy is now a regular presence on American TV. She is an anti-vaccine advocate. One could argue that she directly does real, meaningful harm.
Well, in that case, you've got to blame Barbara Walters. She's a hard journalist.
Just a second. And those who have covered Jenny McCarthy have enabled that. Similarly, Suzanne Somers you know, goes on about injecting hormones into her vagina, and you know, tens of thousands of women going through menopause say, "Oh, I'll go do that," taking 60 pills a day and you know, selling hormones. You know, tomorrow in Toronto and Vancouver and Montreal, Lance Armstrong. You know, the Armstrong Lie is a film that's going to come out, and people are going to see how Lance Armstrong pulled the wool over the eyes of millions of people who believed his story because it was a great story, and then went out and bought, if you believe what the marketers say, you know, because he's a hero, went out and bought Trek bikes and Nike. But you know, that's just a commercial thing. Suzanne Somers, Jenny McCarthy, real damage. What do you guys think about that?
I think there are icons who have done a lot more harm.
Oh, okay, but Suzanne okay, Somers. Fine. Yes, Mussolini did real harm.
But
lots not, of people. Hitler did real harm. Okay, I will give you that, Allison.
No, but you could say you could cast the exact same aspersions on sports journalists and the love that they had for the long ball during the steroid era.
Yes.
I remember a cover of Sports Illustrated with Jason Giambi on it. And this is the pinnacle of sports journalism, Sports Illustrated in the United States. And their cover story was the reason he was such a good hitter was he had better than 20/20 vision. That was the cover story. Where was the hardcore journalism there?
I can't disagree with you. Yeah. And we'll cover that, I'm sure, in another CJF panel. But right now we're talking about celebrity journalism, so I'd actually like you to answer the question.
But it's not the fault of whoever puts Jenny McCarthy on television and whoever listens to the blather of Suzanne Somers, that people are stupid and go out and buy whatever they're selling without looking into it too. I mean, we can, if that is the tag you want to take, then we can basically report nothing about anybody and everybody can sit at home in a little box and never get any input. Yeah, and people must take some responsibility for their own actions.
Or we could not make the deal to sit down with people. To get access
so
to promote
the line between who's a celebrity and who's not,
and who's to decide,
and who's influential and who's not, and how, why, yeah.
Can I talk about Jenny McCarthy
that?
For
sure.
A little bit? Because the person I think who really made Jenny McCarthy was Oprah Winfrey, and Oprah Winfrey, I don't think markets herself as sort of a news journalist, at least not in her show, in the way that she made Jenny McCarthy a well-known advocate for these pseudoscientific remedies. And I think to a certain extent, you have to look at someone like Oprah. And when I talk to people about Oprah's appeal, it's more of an emotional cult. Because you know, Oprah speaks to her own experience. She had guests on her show. I don't know whether she still has her show on. But at the height, she had a lot of women who were overcoming adversity. And her viewers felt this intense bond with her that transcended anything that we could rationally call journalism. It was a sort of emotional support group that was transmitted across millions of television screens. And when she made the decision to bring Jenny McCarthy into that sort of quasi-spiritual medium, millions of people were deceived and bought into her anti-vaccine stuff. I don't think that's a journalism phenomenon. I think that's a larger phenomenon of people being disenchanted with mainstream medicine and that sort of thing. I don't know any really legitimate journalist who validated Jenny McCarthy, with the exception maybe of Larry King. And I mean, if you're going to watch Larry King, you kind of deserve what you get, right? Because it's just everyone knew that he asked softball questions, and that was his niche in journalism, is that he would ask softball questions to people, and people were credulous about it. But we live in an era where it's very easy to debunk people like Larry King, you know, because of social media, and Jon Stewart makes fun of him, stuff like that. So I think, unlike 20 or 30 years ago, we now have more tools to debunk the journalists who are asking softball questions to dubious guests as a way to get them on the show.
I like his answer. Mm-hmm. Let's go with that.
I think Oprah, Oprah in a way does more harm, even though she's not purporting to be a journalist. She is presenting it in a very sort of hard news format and saying this, you need to listen to this, you need to do this, you need to read this. Oh no, whoops, you don't, because it's fiction.
Well, she's sort of a prophet figure. No, she is. It's very creepy. She's a prophet figure telling you you must buy this. You know,
And there's a form of idolatry attached to Oprah and people need to latch on to that, especially in our increasingly secular society. And that's, why people turn to celebrities more and more. But I don't think that... I just don't think, I mean, as far as Hello's concerned, we consider ourselves first and foremost an entertainment medium and a sort of a form of escapism. You can sit and relax with it the way that you'd relax with a good book. You know, we're not saying do what these people do. We're not preaching. We're not setting them up as some example of, you know, to follow necessarily.
You don't think there's no aspirational aspect?
There's an aspirational aspect, but I think that that's a little bit different from you know, basically suggesting that you follow their moral example, and you know, if there's something controversial, then we will raise it. Of course, you know,
Hello,
they
Pop.
Might give an answer and we'll move on, but it's I don't think it's the same thing. I don't think people pick up a magazine like Hello and follow it to the letter, you know? It's an escape.
Would you like them to?
Well, hey, if I could follow it to the letter and have that lifestyle, I absolutely would.
I think Hello Magazine is basically Harry Potter for adults. Because in the same way...
I thought Harry Potter was Harry Potter for adults.
Not in my household, I assure you. No, in the same way that you can't become a wizard, you have to be born a wizard. You can't become royalty. You can only be born unto royalty.
Or marry it,
yeah. Well, it's hard for us after we knock over that liquor store after the... corner store. But yeah, I mean, I agree that it's escapism because the royal world is a world that you can only usually be born into. And I do think it's escapism. I don't think you could compare it to the sort of Jenny McCarthy pseudoscience stuff.
But I think where you build up celebrities, and that's sort of why I'm sorry, read your magazine, because that is not interesting to me. But I read The Enquirer, I read Star, I read Us Weekly religiously, always, and I find it fascinating because what they do is tear people down. And but it's fascinating in that it's almost like these continued fairy tale narratives. It's sort of history. It's the woman who needs to be saved, whether it's from the terrible man or her own back fat. It's the children. It's the evil mother. It's the good mother. It's this continued fascinating narrative that I think serves sort of a sitting in the cave with no light, telling stories purpose.
You know, while you've been saying that, I've been flipping through Hello Canada, because I was looking for your spread, and all I keep running into is royalty. I'm desperately trying.
It's been a busy year for royalty.
Yeah, I guess so. Do you remember which issue you were?
It was the Cillian was on the cover.
Oh, Cillian on the
God,
cover.
See, that's the problem. See, I was looking at all these royal issues, because I was curious. How does something like that come about?
Well, in that specific case, my wife and I.
Wait, sorry. How many times have you been in? I've never been asked.
Times.
By the way,
we were on the cover for our wedding.
Really?
Yeah, that was 5 years ago. Thank you. Actually, it was almost 5 years to the day.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. And we
sold very well, by the way.
I think it might be time for an anniversary issue, Allison.
Well, that was kind of.
Yeah, it almost was. Yeah, and then I think we did one with our twins right after they were born.
Sure.
And
adorable.
And then we did this one. The reason we did this one was actually we assigned a partnership to work with Pampers.
I saw that. Yeah.
And so we it was a sort of a promotional thing, but also to talk about parenthood and where we are and I think my kids are cute. I want to show them off. No,
and the boys love
Ivy. Well, Isabel, yes. Her nickname is Ivy.
Isabel. Yes. Because it was fascinating to me because I got to the end and it said something, was a special thanks to Pampers or special arrangement to Pampers or with Pampers?
We may have thanked them.
You're looking at me like.
Oh, no, I'm curious to know what word's going to come out next. I was just waiting for the word.
Spit it out.
Was that an ad?
I think we're spokespeople, so yeah, there was an element of promotion to it. I don't think it would have gotten in if it were hit people over the head with Pampers, 12-page spread.
Right.
So I think there was a little bit of a little bit of it in there. I think you saw some diapers here and there. And
no,
there
it was actually
mention
wipes.
Off the top, but beyond that, beyond that, we didn't talk diapers.
No.
But there's, that was sort of something that they tried to do. They thought, this is a family that people in Canada know. We're gonna team them up with a brand that Canadians trust, and we're going to see if there's any interest to hear their story as it relates to the product and the family and the magazine. See if those circles can somehow overlap in any way.
It was a very virtuous circle. I was curious, but the only point at which I thought, I wonder if this is, an ad or something, is because there was a picture, and I'll show you if you want to see, of you and your wife, and I thought you had Isabel, and there's a box of the wipes,
I'm
right?
sure,
the
yeah.
Pampers, and
yeah.
just kind of arranged in a way that you kind of had to see it. And here's the interesting thing, and you've been a dad for years. Mm-hmm. The wipes were open, and I was like, oh, you don't leave them open.
Yeah. But perhaps we had
a total rookie mistake.
Perhaps we had just changed her.
No, she was all clean and lovely.
Of course she was clean.
She's
because
shiny.
We had used
she
the
sparkled
latest
sparkled like a Mulroney.
The latest cleaning technology from Pampers.
That's right. It was lovely. So I was just so it was only at that moment that I was like, well, maybe so Allison,
occasionally
I mean,
we will partner with companies, yes,
okay.
to bring us or to help us with our photo shoot, help offset our photo shoot. Costs.
The cost, okay, and I'm curious. So do I'm just not to keep, but like, do you tell readers that's paid for by Pampers?
Well, it's not altogether paid for by Pampers, that's
okay.
We're thanking them. Yes.
And you're like,
I don't know who to. Do you even have children?
No, I don't. No, I had to give them to Pampers.
I am so tired of being manipulated by Big Diaper. It's yeah. It's very disillusioning. But on the other hand, it's not surprising. You watch a movie these days and the characters all have the stuff. Like I play video games sometimes, and it's the product positioning in video games is now way more blatant than what you're just describing. Right. So I don't think this is something that we could blame on celebrity journalism.
Curious about the ecosystem.
We're all looking for revenue sources.
Right. Yeah.
It's fairly ubiquitous, but in some cases, we didn't get access to Ben because of Pampers, if you look at the A-list sphere occasionally, it will happen that it does help us to get access to someone like a Beyoncé, because they're promoting a fragrance and, take that door.
And for the record.
But not in a, whorish way.
A what? I hope we're not live streaming. For the record, there was no agreement made with any of these celebrities up here to not ask questions or to ask certain questions, so to limit in any way. So I,
Except I did ask you to bring up Pampers. I'm very glad you did. Thank you.
I was going to bring it up. I was going to. Thank you. Because we're going to take questions in a couple of minutes, and you can ask anything of these celebrities. You don't think you are, but because I want to share with you something that, well, there are two things. And that is that it is true that this kind of fascination for celebrities is not new, but it's actually much older than we think. I did a piece about a year ago or so, maybe it was 2 years ago, about research that was being done at Yale with capuchin monkeys, which suggested that the respect for the alpha, in this case male, of the species is a kind of celebrity journalism, I mean, in terms of the capuchin species, that may reach back tens of millions of years. So the idea is that what these researchers at Yale were doing were they were training these monkeys to use a kind of currency and then finding out if these monkeys would actually spend more of this currency on alpha male branded food. And in fact, they would. They would actually spend more on brands that had been endorsed by capuchin celebrities.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about that before when we chatted about the fact that our our tendency to revere celebrities even goes back to the caveman days when those at the top of the food chain were the ones that were mimicked and looked up to. Because that way, you know, it would help you survive better if you followed their example. It's an instinctive thing, apparently.
Late last night, I actually got an email from somebody at Hospital for Sick Kids notifying me that, and you guys, I don't know, did you get this announcement? Next Wednesday, and all the media here are invited, next Wednesday, December 4th, 10:30 to 11:45, Hillary Duff and Duracell will be at the Hospital for Sick Kids celebrating the launch of Duracell's Powering Holiday Smiles program in support of Children's Miracle Network and its 14-member hospitals. Obviously a very good cause, but there is an active discussion at the hospital, as there is in many nonprofit or not-for-profit organizations, about the efficacy and, you know, value of using celebrities to bring attention to your cause. So in this case, I presume you're going to send a camera, and I don't...
Executive producer is here. Are we going to send a camera? To the Hillary Duff Duracell thing?
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, absolutely. And you may actually see her handing out toys and batteries. And so that's how your meal is made, just in case you want to know, when Hillary Duff shows up next Wednesday
in the opening montage.
But that's how
a lot of these things, you know, as you were saying, everyone's looking for revenue these days. That this world is changing very, very quickly. It's not a studio doesn't just rely on ticket sales at the box office anymore. Everything is cannibalized and parceled out, and if a battery company has the money to bring a celebrity in, then a battery company has the money to bring a celebrity in. But full stop.
But it's not a matter of revenue in this case. It's a matter of attention, kind of cutting through all of the, breaking through all of the...
Well, there's a lot of noise, you're right. Yeah, there's a lot of noise, and so someone's, how can we get our message across? Like I said, I sort of view these things as circles, and sometimes they approach each other, their orbits approach each other, sometimes they intersect, and in that point where they intersect, they are aligned, and sometimes our show has its own circle, and it aligns with them, and that message is one that we want to help sell. Doesn't happen all the time. We get pitched a lot of ideas similar to a celebrity pitching batteries, and it just doesn't fit with what we want to do. It doesn't fit with the message, the editorial decision, the direction of the show. Sometimes it's just a feeling. Sometimes it's people we don't like working with. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into making that decision. It's not just, oh, there's a celebrity in town, let's cover them.
Right. Do we have got some time for questions? If anybody has any questions, there's a microphone. I'm told that we have to ask from over there.
Should we pass the microphone around?
I don't think they like to do that. I think they'd like to.
Yeah, you could. You can't help yourself.
He's just very democratic. He wants everyone. I guess if you could identify yourself, tell the panel that you're here to ask a friendly question, and then go ahead.
Sure. Hi, I'm Helen Branswell. I'm with Canadian Press. I wanted to find out, does Hello Magazine pay people for the right to feature them in the magazine?
No.
What about Etalk Daily?
We don't pay for interviews.
Etalk, no. We don't have the money for that.
So you don't, you don't pay people, but you do...
Hello buys photographs.
Right.
And pays photographers, and you know, sometimes that money gets diverted to a charity or, you know, wherever they want.
But we don't accept the kind of deal like the embedded ad with Pampers. Do you run anything across the top of the story like, you know, this is a special feature, for instance, like
it's not really a special feature. I mean, it's not an advertorial. So,
it
no,
wasn't?
We would thank Pampers for participating.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, the special feature is what you see in the Globe and Mail.
There are advertorials
in Hello. Special information feature, is that what we call it? Yeah.
Hi, Maureen Shaughnessy Kitts, and I'm on the board of the Canadian Journalism Foundation. I'm fascinated that nobody has brought up in the context of celebrity journalism and gossip the great work that has been done for decades in the province of Quebec. I mean, Quebecers live and breathe that whole model. And we're talking about it in this country as if it's new, and it is not new.
No, it's
it
not,
has
it's
been
not new.
Very, very successful.
It's not new, it just doesn't translate. It doesn't, we've tried to model things. I think the CBC a few years ago tried to take successful French-Canadian shows from Radio-Canada and translate them into English with absolutely no success. It's a completely insulated market where sometimes they don't get even translations of American shows until 5 years after that show has been on the air. I think they're only now discovering Ally McBeal and Seinfeld. I'm joking, but those two did come to Quebec very late. And so when you live in a market where things don't translate and they don't come immediately, and my theory is also that the internet is English and therefore so much of traditional media is still very strong. Radio, television, and magazines and newspapers are still very, very strong ways of getting your message across versus the internet. I think you've got, it's this magical oasis for a star system in a small place to exist and thrive.
Yeah, my comment basically was that they do it very well, and they've been doing it very well for decades.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Just before we take the next question, show of hands, and I kind of feel you should all close your eyes and do the show of hands, but show of hands, hands up those of you who do not read any celebrity journalism or coverage at all on an average day. Total liars. Keep them up. So is it like 10, maybe 15? All right, okay. So about 15% maybe? You're much better than we are. Yes.
Hi, I'm Madeline White. I'm with the Globe and Mail. I find that one of the tacks people really take when they harp on celebrity journalism is that it's not within the public interest, you know, this kind of holier pillar of journalism that we always try to hook on to justify stories. So I was wondering to hear your thoughts on how celebrities kind of factor into the public interest, especially celebrities like Kim Kardashian, who are celebrities for being a celebrity and don't have anything to kind of promote.
Well,
that's yours.
Yeah.
I have two points to make. One is because I come at it from a different angle and I've tried to go for the joke, I think there's something worthwhile in making people laugh. So there's that. But I also think that all this talk about what is good for you and what you should be doing, I don't think that people who read a lot of celebrity stuff and not much else, if all of a sudden it was taken away, we're going to read long think pieces on Senate reform. It's not going to happen.
Can I? I know, as somebody who writes long pieces on Senate reform, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah. You know, if we could just abolish the thing, it would, okay. I think it's interesting because 20 years ago, I think it was a very relevant discussion to say, you know, what articles are editors picking for, you know, are they picking celebrity articles or are they picking Senate reform articles? To a certain extent, this conversation is a little bit beside the point in 2013 because so many people get their news from things like Google News, like aggregators like Google News, or micro aggregators like the top 10 most read articles list on the National Post website or on the Globe site. So essentially, a lot of people are getting their news from lists that are compiled based on what other people found interesting. And if, you know, 80% of the people coming to a given news site to get news are looking for celebrity news, forget the editors. They're the ones who are deciding what they want to read. It's very democratic. And it has a compounding effect, because when they go and get that news, it then promotes the article on the most read site, on its Facebook, its Twitter, its Digged, you know, monosyllables that I don't even know about yet, you know, all these sites that aggregate stuff. Those sites in turn promote the article and then people read it. So to a certain extent, editors have been taken out of the equation about what is in, your term was the public interest. Mm-hmm. I think the public interest is now defined by the public. That wasn't true 20 years ago, probably wasn't even true 10 years ago. But now, you know, Google News is like the number one news source for most people. And Google News, the content on it is based on what people have clicked on other news sites and what people have been looking for on Google. So, you know, editors have been emasculated. You know, it's basically we are feeding a consumer demand. Unless you're at an extremely high-minded publication, like, you know, if you work at NPR,
Globe and Mail,
PBS, Globe, certain sections of the Globe, it's, you know, there you can get away with that stuff. But if you're just running a broad news source where you just have to, you know, there's a woman here, I work with Huffington Post, Huffington Post, you go there, It's basically, what do people want to read? And that's one of the reasons Huffington Post has been successful, that you don't have high-minded people sitting around wood-paneled rooms saying, what should we make people read? People read what they want to read, and often what they want to read is celebrity stuff.
It is true. Generally, my experience with the Huffington Post is they are not high-minded.
Yeah, I mean, they're not low-minded. Like, it's, you know,
I didn't say that.
Yeah, okay.
And
they're medium-minded.
The mainstream media is just as guilty, if you want to term it that way, of you know, creating celebrities and fueling the frenzy. I mean, and making celebrities out of, you know, or bigger celebrities out of already high-profile figures like Will and Kate, for example, and the baby. Like, I mean, you know, CBC, CTV, all the newspapers were all over every aspect of the engagement, the wedding, the baby. I mean, they were all there, and they all helped to fuel this huge
frenzy. And the baby
bump.
The weirdest thing was the baby
bump.
There was 2 days when the leading celebrity in the universe was the inanimate material in the stomach of this British woman, Kate. Like, that was really weird.
And I've been interviewed by the Globe and Mail and the National Post on, all topics pertaining to bumps, babies, engagements, weddings, wedding dresses. I mean, so, you know, let's not just say, oh, well, it's so... those celebrity magazines and those TV shows that are really everybody wants it.
We want part of that little magic that you've got. But what's fascinating is that obviously I presume that makes things more difficult for you, because you've then got to find something unique.
It's like, hang on a minute, they're ours.
But I would say also that you know, if you take, for example, the death of Michael Jackson, I think TMZ broke that. I would argue that most definitely was in the public interest to talk about. Mm-hmm. And then you establish sort of a sliding scale of what is and isn't, and who gets to decide what's in it. You could make an argument. I wouldn't make this argument, but you could make an argument that the Kardashians are worthy of discussion simply because in these troubled economic times, everything they touch turns to gold. And that in and of itself is something that we could and should dissect and study, and in certain ways possibly emulate. I don't know, but you could make an argument that a lot of these things that we deem trivial, simply if you looked at them from a different perspective, are worthy of discussion.
Would anybody like to make that argument tonight? Somebody just walked away from the microphone. Yes.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Wilson-Chapin. I manage all of the digital news properties for Bell Media. So I live every day looking at the screen and looking at what people are reading and talking about. And it's always been my thought that we should both drive and reflect the conversation. And there was a lovely segue there. And I feel like I have to stick up a little bit for Hello and eTalk and all of our wonderful celebrity journalists. I love Hello, and I run news sites every freaking day. I love Will and Kate. I am not afraid to say that. Okay? There's nothing wrong with me. Don't judge.
Steph.
And I can tell you that Canadians and people do too. We had our baby cam. I had a live camera on the front door of that hospital right up until the birth, and I can tell you that our traffic was crazy.
So what do you mean, like, can you quantify that?
Because
I would have thought just the camera was crazy, but...
It was a pool feed, dude. Like, it wasn't just us. It was so competitive. Everybody had the door cam.
Right.
We also had the chimney cam for Pope.
Yeah,
okay?
Sure.
So my question to you guys on that is, digital has absolutely changed, I think, in many ways, our consumption habits, our appetite. It's certainly changed celebrity journalism. Regular people can access without an editor, without having a newsroom dialogue about what they should or shouldn't be looking at. What do you think that has meant now to this genre, that there's so much out there on the internet to go through? What impact do you think that's had?
Well, I think the impact that it's had, it can be felt in all areas of journalism. I mean, I don't have any numbers to support this, but it just seems to me that there's this race now, because of the immediacy of Twitter and social media, there's a race to be first, and if that means that we occasionally make a mistake, well, we'll live with it, we'll apologize for it later. And that seems to be happening just as much in traditional media as it is in entertainment and sports and other things. We're like, whoops, well, we screwed that up. We didn't mean to say that guy won the election. It's actually the other guy who won the election. Sorry about it. We'll try to fix it at our next editorial meeting on how we can set up a better system. I mean, I think it's a new world that a lot of people are still learning to navigate, and it's causing some. I don't want to judge because I can understand it, but it seems like there are a lot more trip ups just in the past few months than there had been prior. But that's just the sort of the opinion of how I see it.
I remember 1991 when, you know, CNN claimed that Scuds were coming over to Israel. So, you know, that there were trip ups, you know, all the way back. But I actually, one of the fascinating things that I've found as my brain has been melted watching eTalk over the last couple of weeks is,
You loved every minute of it, Simon.
I did. I'm still actually, right? I'm having flashbacks right now.
When you know it's working.
but it's actually fascinating to see how you guys will quite happily take, you know, stuff from Instagram, stuff from Twitter, you know, wherever, and as a primary source, and you know, fold that into, frankly, your first act what's interesting is, you know, that stuff anybody can get. Yeah. There's a recognition that anybody can get, but. If you want to talk about the survival of legacy media, you guys have found a way to brand it with you and with TK and with your team.
Oh,
and
boy, you,
people still want curating and presenting in a logical way. I mean,
we're still trying to figure out how to do
it's
that.
It's like the difference between getting, you know, like all the raw, unedited footage you could possibly want to get your hands on from a movie, and then an actual movie, right?
Numbers for our show we're in our 12th season, are higher than they've ever been. And at a time when fewer people are watching television and more people are getting their news immediately online, it's an oddity. I think it's because the only explanation I can come up with, because they don't let me into the meetings where they do focus groups, the only thing I can come up with is they like how the news is packaged, presented, and sort of dissected on a show like ours. I think that, as you said, there's a curation effect. I think when you take all that information, you put it through the eTalk machine, they like what comes out the other end.
Thanks.
Because otherwise, I mean, I don't know why else somebody would watch, given the fact that you can get most of this stuff online or in magazines.
Just like you, Ben, and your pocket square.
Well, there is that.
And the dreamy eyes.
Hey guys, I'm Cassie. I've never really used a mic, so hopefully this isn't too awkward. I don't have an outlet, but I'm just the ultimate pop culture junkie. And while you guys were talking, I had like 102 questions for you, but I have settled on one. Ben, you said something that I think is very accurate in telling, that the world of celebrity is a gated garden. I'm very interested in this realm of old celebrity versus new celebrity. And my question to you guys as a panel is, where do these new celebrities like the Kardashians, who are arguably disrupting the norm, fit into this realm that is the gated garden?
Is there a taxonomy of celebrity?
I think there is.
I just write dirty jokes. I have no theories on how it all holds together. I think a family like the Kardashians, it's a lack of royalty in the USA that draws that sort of hunger for a family that everybody can somehow aspire to be, and at the same time snicker about. And I mean, with the addition of Kanye West, it's like, oh, you know, it's a dream come true for everybody. And yeah, and they do stupid shit all the time, and then they're forgiven, and people keep watching them, and it's fabulous. But I don't quite know why. I mean, maybe I'm full of shit too. I don't know.
I think with the Kardashians, you know, you've got Jon Hamm makes fun of them, and they go on Twitter and they say how upset they are with Jon Hamm, and Anna Wintour won't put her on the cover of Vogue, and Kate Middleton will not accept her clothing and sends it all back to her, and Katie Couric makes fun of her and then sends her a present, and then Kim erupts on Twitter. I think that as somebody who follows them for a job, but certainly doesn't follow them as closely as others might, I think that they probably enjoy the fact that they make a lot of money but wish that they were on another plane of celebrity. And I think a lot of celebrities who, I don't know, are, how do you say this? A woman like Britney Spears is very controlled by her publicists because in a lot of times they don't know where the real story begins and the story that they want to tell people ends. And so you don't get a satisfying interview out of a person like that. A guy like Tom Cruise, who should hate the press, actually loves him quite a bit. It's very odd. So yeah, I think there are these different stratas of celebrity, and I think there's different there are people who see us as simply sort of a means to get their story out, and others will talk to us with a certain level of enjoyment. And so I'm not quite sure what this question was, but that's what I have to say about it.
Okay. I think as a follow-up, I think more what I was getting at is you kind of have this group of people who consider themselves celebrities and are putting themselves out there with unprecedented access. So I guess what I'm very fascinated by is the difference between the access to a personality like Kim Kardashian in comparison to someone like Britney Spears, who is very controlled, and whether or not that disrupts the entire celebrity ecosystem.
They probably have just as many people around them, actually, and you sometimes find that, almost the lesser the star, the more walls they have around them, and the more difficult they make it for you. It's really kind of on a case-by-case basis,
The amount of people that they follow, the amount of openness that they have on social media, I don't know that necessarily translates into celebrity because, you know, look at a girl like Tila Tequila years ago.
Who?
She was the number one, she had the most friends on MySpace, if I'm not mistaken. Is that?
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken, that's how she was famous for a lot of terrible things. And she couldn't translate that. I think she was a precursor to Kim Kardashian, and she couldn't translate that. So being open and willing to share the most base parts of your life doesn't necessarily mean you're going to, get into that gated garden.
Thank you.
I don't know. Does he have to use a mic? I think. May you?
It's a very quick question.
Well, can you use a mic?
No.
Can we bring the mic? I know, but
no.
But people are, watching from all four corners of the world.
No, they're not. You have a question at the top.
Yes.
Guilty pleasure or real news?
Yes.
What is your decision and what is our decision after these very eminent people have talked about it for a long time?
Well, I know the answer, but we have another question. I'll answer that in a minute.
Hi, my name's Bill Doskotch. I'm a journalist here in Toronto. So Frank Magazine is back. They've revivify the brand as an online-only project. Where does Frank fit into the Canadian celebrity and gossip ecosystem?
Well, I don't know what it's reinvented as yet.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yes, Mr. Mulroney, would you like to speak about Frank Magazine?
No, I think by the time this show is over, it'll be gone again.
Okay.
So I have nothing to say about Frank. I never read Frank. I don't know what to say. I think there was a movie made about Frank once that pretty much said everything that needed to be said about Frank.
Okay.
So that's it.
Okay.
I was always kind of embarrassed to look at Frank because I'd look at it and say, my God, we're such a pathetic country that this is like the sort of, college mimeograph type thing that is being used to satirize us. Like it always seemed such a third-rate thing that if Canada were really a first-rate country, we'd have like Spy magazine, or like we'd have some glossy thing that really made me laugh.
What he said.
Yeah, there we go.
But you have no familiarity with it whatsoever.
Oh, I have a passing familiarity with it.
But this is the first time I actually heard that Frank Magazine was coming. I actually am shocked because the thing before it was always a subject of litigation, right? Because the first thing you need to do when you have a gossip magazine is hire lawyers.
Right.
The idea of having an online magazine with no money, but that is also slandering people, seems like kind of a lose-lose proposition. So, it sounds like a really bad idea.
All right. But if it's based in Cayman Islands, then perhaps.
No
lawyers. No. I mean,
It could be bundled with The Walrus or something.
Oh, wow. I would love Frank to thrive because I think it has broken stories through its history that are important stories, some which even have to do with some currently suspended senators. And you know, these stories nobody else would touch. So I know that there is no love lost between Frank and some members of the Canadian establishment. Look, I think, you know, for muckraking, frankly, in Canada, we do have so few real outlets that go where, you know, go to places that, that people should go. I think it's great. Unfortunately, I took a quick look at some of the stories that were on there a couple days ago, and it seems to have the same mix of possibly true and absolutely incorrect, poorly sourced stories that I remember. So, not to generalize.
Hi, I'm Cliff Lee. I'm from the Globe and Mail. Simon, I don't know how the hell you found the afternoon six-pack today, but thank you for mentioning it and pimping
it was awesome.
That out. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm the one behind lots of Simon's ire toward our celebrity coverage.
There's no ire. it's wry observation.
Thank you. So I feel like we've discovered today that people's value of celebrity journalism is very personal because, like it or not, we're all consumers of it. I do believe that you're all liars that put your hands up. But in that spirit, I just wanted to ask whoever has produced some celebrity journalism, what would you say is, I don't want to use the word embarrassing, but like, what would you say is a piece of celebrity journalism that you've produced that you wish you could have done better for whatever reason, because of lack of access or because of the arrangements of that piece of journalism? And as a palate cleanser, what would you say you're proudest of? But the bad one first.
I can't remember a specific one, but I would have to say any time I was asked to talk to somebody like Paris Hilton, because I don't care what she has to say. I don't care. And I don't think a lot of people care what a person like Paris Hilton has to say. So things like that does require a palate cleanser for me. And what I'm most proud of is I think what I started with today was the fact that people can roll their eyes at our show, and that's fine, they will, but a lot of people will still tune in. And as we've done that, I think we've done something. I think while we've had fun and while we've poked fun and been over the top, I think we've done a real service on our show, and we continue to. And so, yeah, I'm proud of that.
How do you get through that Paris Hilton interview then?
Pardon?
How do you get through that interview if you're not the least bit interested in what they have to say?
Oh, in the earlier days, it was like, I think it's only halfway through where I realized, what am I doing? How am I sitting here talking to this person? But fortunately, my producers don't make me talk to her anymore, so there you go.
Allison, did you want to answer Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any story that's in the magazine that I would say we're ashamed of or could have been better, but there's difficult moments with celebrities, you know, and my writers feel it a lot more than I do because they're out there in the trenches and, you know, you send them on to red carpets and they're promised 5 minutes with a star and you know, they stand there for 2 or 3 hours and then they get shut down, the publicist whisks them away. It's, you know, it's not very glamorous all the time.
In fact, rarely.
And then there's times when you know, when you really have to act as reporters, it's not difficult to act as real reporters, but you know, you have to do difficult stuff like tracking down and repeatedly trying to get a hold of members of Corey Monteith's family. But that's a story that we were very proud of, but that was not easy. At all. You know, it's like, did you get a hold of him? Yes, I managed to get 2 minutes with him, but did you get childhood pictures of Corey? No, okay, you got to call Corey's dad back and get his childhood pictures. It's like, you know, those moments are when, you know, it's very rewarding because you feel you are getting something and you know, presenting something to the reader. That they wouldn't otherwise have got. So those things make me proud. And also, because I know you love the royal aspect so much.
Dude, my mother's British.
I did get a Diamond Jubilee medal for Hello's service to Canadians in really giving them royal content that they hadn't got before.
Was that so. One of the awards that you...
That does not classify as award-winning journalism.
Okay, we'll go with that later. John, which celebrity story are you least proud of that you've done?
Celebrity stories. I think the closest I've ever come to a celebrity story, I think I once met Mike Duffy, and I think I
what
actually
was he wearing.
I think he was dressed like this. But no, I guess thank you for inviting me. I'm like the only person here who I think Ben, you're like the closest I've ever met to a celebrity. You're the only celebrity I've ever met. I'm going to shut up now, is what I'm going to do. Yeah.
Marlene, did you want
to? Well, I don't really do those kind of stories, and I have neither standards nor pride. So I will say that my biggest accomplishment is when I managed to put a joke in the Star that maybe some people don't understand how dirty or how it doesn't belong there. So that when I sneak something by the editors, that's my proudest accomplishment.
Awesome. We may have time for one more question, if anybody else wants to hit the mic. But in the interim, the question we will ask is, straight answer, I feel like Oprah, yes or no, Mr. Celebrity journalism, guilty pleasure, or real news? Go.
I think you have to call it real news. I don't want to make people feel guilty. It's real news.
Okay. Marlene?
Of course.
Of course what he said?
Of course what he said.
Yes. I think it is.
Pleasurable news.
The real answer, you're all wrong. It's both. It's a guilty pleasure and real news. But that's okay. You still get the wine afterwards. Any other questions? Last. Go for it.
I have one question. You guys have a bit of a role in defining celebrities. Ben alluded to it that you're sort of a conduit for all the information that's out there, and what you choose and how you present it attracts an audience. On the flip side, you should try to remove your filters, Marlene. You tear down the celebrities, and I think we need both what you're saying, a yin and yang, but how do you decide who is worthy of the ink, the press, the TV time?
In our case, I think a lot of it has to do with just the experience of doing our show and sort of the instincts of our producers and identifying somebody who is a rising star and therefore giving them a little more attention and identifying trends that seem to be exploding overnight and trying to jump on that wave as it's cresting. I don't know. I think, E-Talk was the first show in the world to give a national interview to a little boy named Justin Bieber because his Scooter Braun, the guy who discovered him.
You may know him as Biebs.
The Biebs, right. You know him as the Biebs. It's all our fault.
He keeps taking off his shirt.
He does, and his pants are so low. His business manager went to school with my brother, and he sent me some YouTube links and said, hey, my best friend just signed this little kid from the middle of nowhere. Please take a look, and we'd love it if your show would do an interview with him. And I looked at them, I said, he's very talented. But I didn't think much beyond that. It was validated by a number of our producers because I sent it to them and said, what do you guys think of this? And we went to his hometown and we sat down with him and did the first national interview with him. And so, you get them right sometimes. You can identify them very, very early. And other times, not so much. You do a Tila Tequila story.
I think actually the job of identifying celebrities to a certain extent has been democratized and crowdsourced. And the best example I could think is the Korean singer Psy. He's the guy that the Gangnam Style video.
Who?
There may be people in this room.
Yeah, okay.
What made him a celebrity was he was the first guy to get 1 billion hits on YouTube. And this is the first time in history that you can actually quantify. There are people I've never heard of who have 300 million hits on YouTube. And those people are celebrities, regardless of what anyone in this room thinks they're celebrities. And so people like Ben, to a certain extent, I guess have to follow that wave as opposed to leading that wave. And again, this comes with this new age of journalism where, to a certain extent, we're following what the crowd does as opposed to leading it. And I'm not sure that's an unhealthy thing. I think it is a good thing that people now have a voice. Not just in terms of news, but in who they want to follow. Sometimes they make bad choices, like Paris Hilton. Sometimes they make good choices, like Psy. but it's become a lot more democratized, certainly.
Great. Well, thank you, John, Marlena, Ben, and Allison. Now you may pepper them with your questions afterwards.
I'm Bob Lewis, chair of the Canadian Journalism Foundation. I think I can safely say this is, Simon has been one of the liveliest panels we've had, so we thank you very much. And let's have a nice round of applause for all of them. We're going to try and live up to the liveliness and reputation in January. January 23rd is our next panel. We're going to do something on how to make print pay. We're going to explore paywalls, sponsored content, and other strategies aimed at reinventing the business model. We have an A-team of lineup of speakers: Globe and Mail publisher Philip Crawley, Toronto Star publisher John Cruickshank, Post Media Senior Vice President Eastern Region Jerry Knott, La Presse Plus editorial page editor Andre Pratt, and from Boston, the founder and director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard, Josh Benton. And before I invite you to join us for some refreshments, I'd like to add to the thanks that Natalie expressed earlier to say a thank you to CNW for their generosity in promoting all of our events. So please join us for continuing the conversation. And thank you again to the panel.